What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Pakistan's Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif is vowing to intensify counterterrorism operations in the wake of Sunday's deadly suicide bombing in the eastern city of Lahore that targeted Christians. At least 72 people, including some 30 children, were killed. Hundreds more were wounded in the blast at a crowded park.
Meri behno aur bhaiyo, main aaj aapke
saamne. In a national address, the Prime Minister said he would avenge every drop of blood of our martyred people. We'll not rest until we've accounted for everything to the end. Prime Minister Sharif visited the city where he chaired a security meeting and visited hospitals where victims are being treated. A military spokesman says security agencies have conducted several operations based on initial leads and arrested a number of suspect terrorists and facilitators. The United Nations says it received allegations of two new cases of sexual abuse by UN peacekeepers in Central African Republic. UN spokesman Stefan Dujarric said Monday the latest cases raised the number of reported allegations of sexual abuse by peacekeepers to 25 this year. The first involves a member of the Burundian contingent.
The allegations are in connection with the alleged rape of a 14-year-old girl, which was first reported to the mission by UNICEF last week. In addition, there is also another new allegation of possible sexual exploitation implicating a yet unidentified member of the Moroccan military contingent. According to the information received by the mission, the unidentified peacekeeper engaged in an exploitative sexual relationship with a local adult woman in February of this year.
The UN has faced months of attention over allegations of abuse by peacekeepers, mostly in CAR in the Democratic Republic of Congo. This is VOA News. A man widely reported to be a main suspect in last week's deadly Brussels terrorist attacks has been released over a lack of evidence. Authorities say they had no justification to hold the man, identified only as Faycal C. He had faced preliminary charges of taking part in a terrorist group, terrorist murder, and attempted terrorist murder. Cuba's aging former president Fidel Castro has written in a state-run media that his opposition to closer relations with the U.S. in the wake of President Obama's historic visit last week. In the article, he's quoted as saying, "We don't need the empire to give us presents." The 89-year-old Castro, who turned power over to his younger brother in 2008, stayed out of sight during the Obama visit, the first by a sitting U.S. president in nine decades. White House spokesman Josh Earnest was asked to respond.
The fact that the former president felt compelled to respond so forcefully to the president's visit, I think, is an indication of the significant impact of President Obama's visit to Cuba.
The U.S. and Cuba reestablished diplomatic relations in July. The U.S. Monday welcomed the recapture of the ancient city of Palmyra by Syrian-backed forces Sunday, but insisted that President Bashar al-Assad is not the face of the future in Syria. John Kirby is a U.S. spokesman.
We do think it's a good thing that Daesh no longer controls it. That said, we're also mindful, of course, that the best hope for Syria and the Syrian people is not an expansion of Bashar al-Assad's ability to tyrannize the Syrian people.
Kirby said we can't forget from the IS group did during the 10-month occupation of Palmyra, destroying a part of what he called human history, beheading a renowned archaeologist responsible for maintaining the ancient temples and artifacts that date back to the Roman times. Fighting reportedly continues for control of territories surrounding the city of Palmyra. Seven suspected Somali pirates are set to go on trial in France Tuesday in connection with the 2011 hijacking of a French yacht in the Gulf of Aden. The defendants are accused of killing the lone male aboard the catamaran, kidnapping his wife, who survived the ordeal and was later rescued. The suspects, 25 to 32 years of age, face possible life prison terms if convicted by a Paris court. Uncertainty persists whether a girl taken into custody in Cameroon is one of the missing schoolgirls abducted by Boko Haram from the village of Chibok in northern Nigeria's Borno State nearly 2 years ago. The would-be suicide bomber was caught carrying explosives in Lamani in northern Cameroon Friday. Parents from Chibok were sent to Cameroon to try to confirm the identity of the girl, but she's been given medical treatment. Photos of her have been sent to a non-governmental organization to pass on to the parents. She's reportedly much younger than the girls abducted from the school in April 2014. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Boateng in Washington. Today is Tuesday, March 29th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Is Cameroon having a second thought about the would-be so-called Chibok suicide bomber?
For the time being, we are leading a thorough investigation to know what deserves to be known. And when we are ready, we will give you the right information.
Issa Chiroma Bakari is Cameroon's government spokesman. It's 714 days since the Chibok girls were abducted by Boko Haram. Ethiopia's so-called Zone 9 bloggers are again faced with the possibility of returning to prison. Ivory Coast fights child labor on its cocoa plantations and 40 days of house arrest and counting for former Ugandan presidential candidate Kizza Besigye.
I have never been presented before in a court of law. It is now 40 days since I was detained. This is absolutely illegal.
Dr. Kizza Besigye is a former presidential candidate for the Opposition Forum for Democratic Change. And why are residents of a South Sudan town changing their beer drinking habits? Those stories plus Mark Omar and Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. There are reports that Cameroon authorities are skeptical about the claim made by a would-be girl suicide bomber that she is one of the 276 Nigerian schoolgirls kidnapped by Boko Haram in 2014. A French news agency report quotes an anonymous government official as saying the authorities don't think the girl is one of the Chibok girls because of inconsistencies in her apparent age. Cameroon government spokesman Issa Chiroma Bakari declines to comment on the report, saying only the authorities are still conducting a thorough investigation.
Unfortunately, right now, I don't have any reliable or trustworthy information to give you for the time being. But I think that when the government is ready to bring to your knowledge something which deserves to be brought to your knowledge, I'm going to do it. That reason why I say that for as long as I don't have any substantial information to give you, it is not useful to make any comment. For the time being, we are leading a thorough investigation to know what deserves to be known. And when we are ready, we will give you the right information.
May I ask you, what has been the nature of so-called suicide bombers? Are they articulate? Do they speak clearly? As compared to this girl who we understand is speaking.
The only thing that I can tell you, according to the first statement I made, they are under investigation. And at this point of time, because, you know, in my capacity as the spokesperson, I must not relay rumor. I give the right information. And the right information is that today I have nothing very much important that I can give you which will please your expectation or your curiosity. I just plead to give us time when we are ready, when we deem it necessary to release any information. You will receive it at due time. But for the time being, I have no information whatsoever that we deem it necessary to bring to your knowledge.
So who is doing the investigation? The military, the police, your intelligence? Who is investigating this girl?
Accept the fact that the competent and talented people are handling the issue. I think that this is just what deserves to be said. Who is leading information and who is investigating, this is not important at all. What is important is that for the time being, we have no information to put at your disposal for any kind of exploitation or communication or investigation.
Cameroon government spokesman Issa Chiroma Bakari was speaking with me from the capital, Yaoundé. A spokeswoman for the Bring Back Our Girls movement of Nigeria says if the news that a would-be girl suicide bomber is one of the 276 Nigerian schoolgirls kidnapped by Boko Haram in 2014 is true, it will provide well-sought intelligence for the Nigerian government to find the rest of the girls. Yesterday, Monday, marked the 714th day since the girls were abducted. Aisha Yusufu says if the would-be suicide bomber is one of the Chibok girls, then it should also serve as a reminder to the whole world that the girls are still alive, in danger, and need to be rescued and brought back to their families.
First of all, today is 714 days that the girls have been abducted, and we have remained hopeful. Hope endures is one of the hashtags we have for 2 years coming up. It's 17 days to exactly 2 years of the abduction. And for us, we know that indeed those girls are alive, and wherever they are, we have insisted on the fact that it is the duty of the Nigerian government to ensure that they are rescued. Having said that, if it turns out to be one of the Chibok girls, well, at least we would have gotten one back out of the 219. And probably we'll be able to get credible intel. Like December, the president said that he had no credible intel. This would be a pointer to us possibly getting credible intelligence. Apart from that, it will also remind the whole world that these girls are still alive and they are in danger and they need to be brought back home. It will also mean that there should be regional cooperation and international cooperation to ensure that those girls are brought back home. If it turns out not to be the Chibok girls, we still insist that let's do all we can to ensure that all abductees that are with the terrorists, they are brought back home. It is heinous to imagine the fact that little girls are being made to do this, children who are victims themselves. And as we continue to feel the Chibok girls, indeed we are feeling humanity.
Aisha, does your group feel that perhaps the Nigerian government is doing what it's supposed to do to find these girls, or do you kind of feel the interest is decreasing as time goes by?
Well, as it is, there's so much more that the government should do. One of the things that we have called out consistently since 2014 is the fact that there should be a DNA data bank profile of all the children. And unfortunately, up to today, we do not have that in place, which will ensure that immediately any claims like this come out, it's just within hours, we'll be able to verify whether indeed it is Chibok girl or indeed it is not. For us, the issue of the Chibok girls is not being taken as seriously as it ought to be taken, not just by the Nigerian government alone, I think by governments all over the world. For those who have said that they will ensure the Chibok girls are rescued, now seem to have moved on. What happened? The lives of those girls, they matter. And as long as anywhere we tell the girl child that she should dare to dream, she should aspire, she will know it's a lie, because 219 of her sisters did just that. And today they have been in captivity for 714 days.
Aisha Yusufu is the spokeswoman for the Bring Back Our Girls Movement of Nigeria. She was speaking with me from Abuja. It has been 40 days since Ugandan police placed presidential candidate Dr. Kizza Besigye of the Forum for Democratic Change under house arrest following that country's February 18 presidential election. The police say Dr. Besigye is being held under Section 24 of the Police Act, which empowers the police to carry out what they call preventive arrest and detention of anyone whose unrestricted movement the police may deem a threat to public order. The police have also restricted visitors to and from Dr. Besigye's home. On Easter Monday yesterday, police intercepted two minibuses carrying a group of 72 people, including two Anglican church clerics from Dr. Besigye's home district of Rukungiri. Dr. Besigye again says the police detention of him without charge is illegal.
My house is still besieged by increasing the number of forces of the Uganda police of different types. My visitors are still having a lot of trouble getting through to me. Members of the All Saints Church, which is my local church, had chosen to come and celebrate Easter Monday with me because I normally attend service of Easter at their church. And when they knew that I could not even go to any church, they decided to come and have a communion service with me. And so they were more than 70 members of our church who came this morning. They were detained some about 2 or 3 miles before reaching my home. And although they pleaded, they were not let through. And in fact, some who eventually decided to walk from there and to get to my house were arrested.
Dr. Besigye, we did have a chance sometime last week to speak to a police spokesman who said that the police took this preventive arrest or so, and were preventing also people from visiting you, people that the police suspect if they went to your house, they will cause trouble. So do you think the police stopped these people coming to visit you on Monday because they probably suspected that they might cause trouble?
First of all, as I have said before, the police action is completely illegal, has no basis at all in law, because my home is not a gazetted place of detention. If they chose to detain me, whether for preventive purposes as they claim or for any other reason, they should detain me in a place gazetted for detaining people, not my home. Two, if they suspect that I am infringing the law in any way, then the law requires that they produce me before a magistrate, before the courts of law. They cannot be the accusers, they cannot be the investigators and the judges. They must put me before people who will investigate their claims. I have never been presented before any court of law. It is now 40 days since I was detained. This is absolutely illegal. Beyond that, obviously, they have absolutely no basis in stopping anybody or even interrogating and subjecting visitors to a private home through the kinds of procedures that they are subjecting them. In our Constitution, we have protection of the privacy of the home, and this is a blatant violation of that right. So what the police is doing is simply violating our Constitution, violating the laws with impunity.
Dr. Kizza Besigye is the former presidential candidate of Uganda's main opposition Forum for Democratic Change. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. Today is Tuesday, March 29th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. 70% of the world's cocoa comes from West Africa, most of it from Ivory Coast. Child labor on cocoa plantation has been well documented and persists, despite a 15-year-old agreement between the government and the world's top chocolate sellers to stop it. Emily Yap reports from Ivory Coast on reports to end the practice.
Cocoa plantations surround the small village of Boniko in southern Ivory Coast, and keeping children off those fields is the goal of an awareness campaign. The speaker asked the crowd if their children should go with them in the field. "No, because we use machete," replies a man. "Children can injure themselves. We should avoid it." The event was organized by the International Cocoa Initiative that has been building schools and raising awareness about child labor in Ivory Coast since 2007. ICI West Africa representative Euphrasie Aka says there are many drivers of child labor: lack of information, lack of awareness regarding dangerous work, poverty, and a lack of infrastructure in rural areas. The ICI is financed by some of the world's top chocolate companies, including Nestle, which is facing a U.S. class action suit for allegedly not disclosing on labels its suppliers might rely on child labor. Ivory Coast cocoa production was slowed for a decade by conflict, which diverted attention from ending child labor. Getting rid of child labor, however, can be profitable for farmers. It is one of the conditions for having their cocoa certified fair trade and sold at a higher price. At the entrance of the Copadef cooperative in the town of Ganiwa, a mural sets the tone. A red cross is painting over the picture of a child holding a machete in a cocoa field. "Children under 15 years old should be in school. No to child labor," reads the text. The Copadef cooperative has been certified by Fairtrade International for 5 years. Its president, Christophe Kofi Kouakou, says the producer have built brick houses for themselves, roof, and small solar energy panels thanks to the premiums they receive. The cooperative keeps an eye out for child workers. Cooperative worker André Borou visits members to check that no children are doing dangerous work. Borou says that at first people would tell us, "But when we were children, we work in the field." He says he replies, "We all did it, but you saw how it limited us. Some got illnesses, some did not have time to study." He says now people understand. It is not just local children, however. Children are trafficked from neighboring countries. In June, Interpol rescued 48 children from Ivory Coast cocoa plantations. The operation was backed by the Ivory Coast First Lady's Office, which has been coordinating the effort against child labor and child trafficking. It has launched poverty reduction initiative to reduce the use of child labor, such as providing microcredit for women to diversify their incomes between cocoa harvests. Yet, an estimated 1.1 million children worked on cocoa plantations during the 2013-2014 harvest season. The government said it aims to reduce that number by 70% in the next 4 years. Emily Yop for VOA News in Abidjan.
5 months after the release of Ethiopia's Zone 9 bloggers, they are faced with the possibility of returning to prison. In Addis Ababa, Martha van der Wolf spoke to the bloggers about their post-incarceration lives and what this case has meant for Ethiopia.
29-year-old Abel Wabala spent more than a year and a half in prison, together with eight other bloggers and freelance journalists. Although Abel was acquitted 5 months ago, life has not been easy since.
We can't go abroad. Getting a job is very difficult. We are not allowed to work. We are not allowed to move.
Abel previously worked at the National Airlines as an engineer, but they will not take him back. His left ear is no longer functional, he says, due to mistreatment in prison. The bloggers' passports have been confiscated. Abel was one of the six bloggers arrested in April 2014, along with three affiliated freelance journalists. They were accused under the anti-terrorism law of using social media to incite violence in Ethiopia. Although all the bloggers and journalists were acquitted, the prosecutor appealed their release. So they have to appear Tuesday in Ethiopia's Supreme Court. Atnaf Brahane says that even though he has been out of prison for 5 months, he lives in a state of fear.
After my release, I'm basically doing nothing because I know that every move I make will be traced. I'm afraid that I may go to prison. The appeal is going on to, the appeal is like a chain to me now, right now. I'm preparing myself to prison.
Ethiopia is frequently criticized by human rights organizations on its press freedom record. The government has always stated those imprisoned are criminals using journalism as a cover. Zone 9 is a reference to an Ethiopian state prison with eight zones. The bloggers use Zone 9 to indicate the larger prison they feel makes up the rest of the country. Africa researcher Carrie Patterson of the New York-based Committee to Protect Journalists says the possible return of the bloggers to jail is unacceptable and a huge blow to press freedom in Ethiopia.
The Zone 9 bloggers, you know, their tagline has always been that they blog because they care. These are young people who are deeply committed to seeing a safer, freer, better, more democratic Ethiopia and who have faced, you know, repression and crackdowns at every turn.
Despite the belief by the bloggers that their future in Ethiopia is bleak and uncertain, Abel, Atnaf and the others are still writing online blogs. The decision by Ethiopia's Supreme Court on the appeal will prove whether they will have to go back to prison or can continue writing. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
Bar owners in South Sudan town of Wau say beer sales are down because most people can no longer afford to go out and drink because of the country's difficult economic times. Many area residents say they have resorted to drinking locally brewed alcohol, commonly known as Siko, which is far cheaper. Some bar owners say they will likely close their businesses soon since the number of customers have reduced significantly. Michael Atit of VOA's South Sudan in Focus program reports from Wau.
Patrons at local bar in Wau Town's High Jebel residential area listen to music and dance as a waitress scoops up empty beer bottles. 37-year-old Munute Kleimonas, an Eritrean who has run this local bar since 2007, says many of his former customers have stopped drinking beer due to the economic hardships facing the country. Speaking in Arabic, he says, unlike in the past, when he sold more than 100 crates of beer a day, nowadays he sells as few as 5 crates of beer in a day. Takleimona says, in the past, business used to be good. I used to sell more than 100 crates in a day, but now things have changed, he says. He says he sells only a maximum of 5 to 8 crates per day. Only few customers turn up to the bar for drinks, he says. People don't have enough money. This is the main reason. Teklemona says beer prices have increased rapidly in the past few months, leaving many residents unable to afford having a beer or two at the local bar. For example, Tasca, which used to cost 7 South Sudanese pounds early last year, now goes for 60 South Sudanese pounds. And a small bottle of whiskey, which used to cost 10 South Sudanese pounds, now costs 80 South Sudanese pounds. A 49-year-old teacher who does not want to be identified by name because of his work but he's willing to have his voice recorded, says, for the last 1 year, he has never stepped into a bar. He says he has resorted to drink locally brewed alcohol, which is cheaper than beer.
No, I can't go there. Let me go to go and take our local drinks. I can't go and take that one. If I go and take it, what about the kids? What about the registration of the school? What about my benefit that I want to take? I want to buy a pen and then I want to wash. No.
Bandindi says he hopes the economy will improve soon and commodities prices will drop so he can drink as much as he used to. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Libya mauled Sao Tome and Principe 4-0 in a 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifier played in Blida, Algeria on Monday. Elsewhere, Central African Republic pipped Madagascar 2-1, Mali edged Equatorial Guinea 1-0, and Zimbabwe swept aside Swaziland 4-0. In a friendly match, hosts Sierra Leone pipped Gabon 1-0 in Freetown. Early on Friday, Gabon edged Sierra Leone 2-1 in Franceville in the opening leg. Today, Tuesday, the fourth leg of the 2017 Nations Cup qualifiers concludes with 15 fixtures. Senegal travels to Niamey to face Niger. Hosts Malawi test Guinea in Blantyre. Lesotho is at home to Seychelles in Maseru. Namibia welcome Burundi in Windhoek as Sudan test African champions Ivory Coast in Khartoum. Liberia host Djibouti in Monrovia. Togo welcome Tunisia in Lome. The Democratic Republic of Congo travel to Luanda to face Angola as Gambia are at home to Mauritania in Bakau. Uganda welcome Burkina Faso to Kampala as Egypt test their Nigerian visitors in Alexandria. South Africa host Cameroon in Eteguini as Ethiopia welcome Algeria to Addis Ababa. Rwanda engage visitors in Mauritius in Kigali and Morocco welcome Cape Verde Islands to Agadir. In Brazil, the Brazilian under-23 side beat their visiting South African peers 3-1 in Maceió, Alagoas State, some 2,100 kilometers north of Rio de Janeiro on Sunday. 3 days earlier, African under-23 champions Nigeria pipped their Brazilian peers by a solitary goal in Espírito Santo, some 700 kilometers north of Rio de Janeiro. All three teams are gearing up for the Rio de Janeiro Olympics in August. Finally, in hockey, Egypt pipped South Africa 3-2 to win the men's contest at the Africa Junior Championships in Windhoek, Namibia on Sunday. Zimbabwe outplayed Namibia 5-3 to claim the bronze medal, while Tanzania were placed fifth. Meanwhile, South Africa overpowered Zimbabwe 10-0 to win the women's contest as Namibia outclassed Tanzania 15-0 in the bronze medal playoff. Consequently, Egypt and South Africa will represent Africa at the World Men's Under-23 Hockey Championships in India, while South Africa and Zimbabwe qualify for the World Women's Under-23 Championships in Chile. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. Mark Oba in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The United Nations says it has received allegations of two new cases of sexual abuse by UN peacekeepers in the Central African Republic. UN spokesman Staffan Dujarric said Monday the latest cases raised the number of reported allegations of sexual abuse by peacekeepers in the Central African Republic this year to 25. He said the new allegations involve Burundian peacekeepers who allegedly raped a 14-year-old girl. That's it for this Tuesday, March 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
Can't get enough of the sunny side of sports? Well, we've solved that problem. We now have a half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. So visit voanews.com for more details and enjoy the show.